Hello, and welcome to the Strength to Be Human podcast with your host, author and playwright Mark Anthony Rossi. This show explores all forms of creativity for those searching for meaning and a place in the world. To err is human, but so is to love. Now, without further ado, here's your host.
Welcome to Strength to Be Human. I'm Mark Anthony Rossi, and today the show is focused on confidence. What is confidence? According to the dictionary, confidence is a feeling or consciousness of one's powers or of reliance of one's confidence. Well, that's one classic definition, and there are a few others. But for our purposes today, I want to talk about confidence as an antidote to fear. In the business of art, in the pursuit of creativity, in the goal, in the dream, it's fear that slows or completely stops so many who fall victim to its grip. My father used to say, God makes 10 violin players, but he knows 9 will give up. I believe the gist of what he was saying really is that oftentimes many people can be born with incredible talents, or maybe gained talents later in life, but fear holds them back from really seeing everything that could come out of that. So you probably remember people when you were growing up too that were able to sing or write or dance, but they wind up giving up those dreams because they were afraid to pursue them, or maybe they didn't have much of a support system like a family, or maybe they had a family that just didn't want to support that and they wind up doing something else, and that's something they always regretted throughout their life. We want to try to prevent that on this show as much as we actually can. So if we're to find confidence in creativity, it must first start with a basic faith in our own abilities. Now, I know some of you might doubt and even wonder in this process, hey, is that backwards? And I'm telling you, it's not, because you can't have confidence first and then write that poem or compose that song. You have to start the work first, and then you find faith in your abilities, and then you gain the necessary confidence to move on to the next project. The very act of creating something is an act of faith. Remember that, because fear is stupid, because it's trying to convince you that what you're doing is less than worthy. But here's a newsflash. It isn't supposed to be great. It's a trail run. It's a shot in the dark. It's a test of what you can do and then what you still need to do. You should laugh at fear, because it's a negative whisper flying in the face of logic. You're not going to hit it out of the park on the first try. So there's no actual pressure other than whatever you bring to the table yourself. So leave the fear behind and laugh as it fades away. Let me tell you a story about someone who I met recently. It's very interesting because this is a person much older in life. And it turns out that they allowed fear for many, many years to hold them back from singing and composing and doing something on stage with their voice and a guitar. And I was amazed when I heard the person and I heard their story, because it was a perfect example of what we're talking about today, is how fear can hold you back. And sometimes it's just the fear of not wanting to go and do what's necessary to create something wonderful, because you have all these other elements you believe are obstacles, whether it's raising a family or putting together a budget or just basic stage fright. And this person was explaining to me and many of the people in the audience about how they felt. Almost a hostage to their fear. They were singing in their home. They were singing in the shower. They were recording a little something in the garage. But they wouldn't send that tape out. They wouldn't allow anyone else outside of the immediate friends or family to listen. Until finally, I don't know if they've grown old of the fear or they've just grown old themselves, but they realized it was time to go out there and do something. The guy wrote a wonderful original song of his experience, which was great. And he even sang a cover from another band, but he sounded great on stage. He played well. He had a really wonderful voice. So you always want to say, when you hear something like that, what was he going through? I mean, even though he explained it, what was he going through that he spent so long not being out there like he wanted to? Perhaps doing something else in his life that he didn't want to do. Maybe necessary for the bills, maybe necessary for the family. Maybe just necessary because until he was able to go forward with what he really loved to do, he still needed to have some sort of direction in his life. And I wonder that sometimes with folks, that if they're doing something that was supposed to be temporary and now became more permanent in their lives for years and years. Or maybe possibly they're just doing something because that's all they think they're ever going to do. Because they haven't picked up that microphone, or they haven't picked up that guitar, or that carving tool, or that paintbrush, or even just that paper and pen to write the next great American novel, or the next wonderful poem, or the next excellent play. I know for a long time myself, especially when I was growing up and starting to write the first poetry, that I always felt that I needed to not share that with folks for a good long time. I mean, it was years until I finally went into the Air Force, where I started writing more formally and starting to send it out and share it around 1984. But years before that, it didn't seem, the art didn't seem, I guess you could say, masculine. I know those are probably more old-fashioned ideas now these days, but that was the feeling back then, that anything that was creative or even possibly intellectual was something that wasn't manly, wasn't the tough guy. And I'm originally from New Jersey, so being tough was necessary when you're in the neighborhood. No doubt about that. So that part of the reality was true in the sense that you needed to project that type of strength out there, or you would have some problems on the street. But I always knew in the back of my mind, it made no logical sense to hide if you had a brain, or if you read a book, or you can write something. How is that supposed to diminish you? And that's sometimes that's what you buy into. Sometimes the fear is not the fear of, I can do this, or can I do this? Sometimes the fear is just, well, how's that person next to me going to react? Well, how's my mother going to feel about it? Or how is the neighbor going to think? Well, what about somebody out there in the audience listening or reading? Sometimes the fear is more of about somebody else's reaction than your own intimidation or your own insecurities about creating something that could be new and fresh and different. So I can certainly relate to this topic a great deal. I think also just doing the podcast, I've been wanting to do this for quite some time. I've done plenty of interviews on other radio shows and other internet radio shows, and even some podcasts themselves. And so I always felt comfortable doing it. I never really had a problem. But on being the host, you talk yourself out of so many things in the beginning. You know, can I get through the technology? You know, can I put together a sentence or a paragraph that's going to make some sense out there? Or can I put together a show that's going to be cohesive and, you know, something that's going to communicate what we're trying to say today about overcoming obstacles and putting aside fear? This way you can gain confidence and become creative and be creative. I know lately I've been speaking to a lot of playwrights about not only producing plays or getting plays produced, but also just overcoming the objections you hear, or making sure that whatever you're sending out there is going to have a fair shot. And there's always the fear that no matter how much you've written and how many years you've written, In a strange sense, in the creative field, especially of various forms of writing, I can't say as much about, you know, music or acting, but I know in writing, It always seems like you're at the first point of it, the square one, because you could write 10, 15, 20, 30 years, but in the end, that editor or that producer, that director, they're going to have a say in whether something is going to be printed or produced or not. And the feeling of being accepted, it's no different than the feeling to being rejected as the first time this has ever happened in your life. Whether you're 20 years old or 50 years old, it's really the same thing. And you feel the same elation when you get accepted and the same, you know, disappointment when you don't. And you're not often sure, no matter how many years you've been doing it, no matter how many years this has sort of happened to you, what the real truth of it all is. You only could do so much analysis before you could stop blaming your own writing or, you know, your way you submitted something, or did you not research the market appropriately and it was simply never going to be a good fit from the start. There's only so much you could do with that before you have to be able to say, I'm going to go on to that next place. I'm going to be confident that something else is going to happen next time. Sometimes it is a battle of the numbers, and that can be a bit maddening to have to send out something 10, 15, 20 times for maybe have a chance for someone to have a response, positive or negative. So as you can clearly see, there are many forms of obstacles that could stop confidence in these tracks, and the various forms of fear that we often face are one of the major ones, I believe, because it comes in so many different forms and angles and faces. The internal fear of not succeeding, or the internal fear of not creating something that's unique and wonderful. The fear of acceptance, believe it or not. Some people can get accepted and it still becomes a different type of fear. Oh boy, can I not do that again? Was that just a fluke? Then you have the fear, of course, of the reception outside of you, whether it's in your family or outside of your home, in your favor, in the neighborhood, possibly out in the audience. There's that fear. Will they not like it? Will they not communicate well with me through it? Would I not communicate through them? Would I not make that connection? So what I say to get through all of this is to simply start something. Just the process of working on something now only starts putting aside those fears. They're going to be there for a while. But it allows you to start moving in the direction you should be moving in the first place. Just start something. Start that first line of your essay, or that first couple of words for the poem. Although from my own practice and my own philosophy about writing poetry is, you really want to try to do something to get the title down. A lot of folks feel that it should be come later, but I always feel that the poem's title, it should be the first thing. If you can get a good poetic title down, or even something that maybe you'll change later, but it'll help you immediately to frame what you want to do. You know, if you're writing a poem about how it's wonderful to walk in the forest. I don't know if that's really the greatest topic to write about, but just for speaking about this, let's say you're writing a poem about walking in the forest. It doesn't hurt for at least a temporary title to have, you know, walking in the forest. I know, not the greatest title in the world for a poem, but nevertheless, it gives you a starting point. It gives you something to frame so that you can build from there. And then you can start on your first line and go from there. Once you start getting into the whole motion and maybe emotion of putting together something, you'll notice that the fear slips away, because as you're going along, you're gaining more confidence already. You're putting together words. You're trying to figure out how you sort things in your head. How do you organize things emotionally, maybe, about the subjects you're writing about? And then eventually you can organize the words and the vocabulary, or your vocabulary for it, because that's really the key whenever you're doing something, especially writing. Although I think generically you can use the word vocabulary for many different creative endeavors, but it's about getting your vocabulary so that you can have your stamp on it. And that's really the essential first step to gaining confidence in creativity, is making sure that you're feeling you have your stamp on it. Now, it doesn't matter at the moment if this isn't the greatest thing you've done, or if this isn't the greatest thing that's out there, because it's simply a first step. But it's already becoming yours. And I'll tell you something, it's better to have something at yours that isn't great at the moment than to have nothing at all. Because that's where editing comes in. And that's where, again, the second step, you learn about editing and you learn about gaining confidence, because editing is about improving what you just did. And that's why I say time and time again that, fear is not only stupid, it's silly, because it flies in any kind of face of logic, because editing, again, is going to allow you to create further. Editing in itself is a creation. It's a creative tool. It's a creation. Because yesterday, you might have had something that looked not so wonderful, and then the next day, you've been thinking about it, you can start doing more with it. And each time you go back to it, you're chipping away until you have the image that you want. You have that sound that you want. You have the performance that you want. That's what's necessary to gain confidence. And that's what's necessary to be finally create, through that piece, your own creative identity, which is really step three in the whole process. You want to start something, you want to edit something, and then you simply want to craft it enough to finish it to where you feel it is now worthy enough to go out there. Now, this is not to say that that first poem you wrote is going to be on the same creative level as somebody else who's been published for 10 years. You don't want to get unrealistic, but at the same point, as long as it's you feel unique, and as long as it's credible, as long as it has a good voice and it's saying something that needs to be said in a poetic fashion, you're right up there with everyone. And then from there, you can move forward. And then you're going to notice right away that fear no longer becomes a major factor. Now it's about, how do I improve? Not only through editing, just by reading. Reading is really important. I don't care what endeavor you have, you could be a painter. Reading is important because it still helps you to relax and to see what others are doing and others are thinking and others are trying to create. It lets you see, I guess you'd say in a creative sort of way, that audience that you have on the creative level. What are other creators doing? It's important to know, because it lets you to start measuring a little bit about what you can do differently, what you might be doing better or different. It's a great time to take a break and talk a little bit about the affiliates to the program and to our blog site, strengthtobehuman.blogspot.com. And the first is Wix. They're a great site. Allows you to build for free a website. Many people who are starting to build a website for themselves will go to Wix, and you should. They have premium programs. They're inexpensive, probably the cheapest on the internet. But they have quality software, quality internet connection, quality site building that you can use. I urge many people to use this, mainly because, especially if you're a writer or a creative person, you want to have a place that has a site that has information about what you're doing, links to things you've been published already on, links that maybe something you're doing. Maybe you have a play that's going to be opening in London, you know what I mean? But you're in Chicago, you want to let folks know, possibly over there, or possibly just because they might have a link to that sort of thing. And so Wix is an excellent, excellent source for that. Another wonderful one that I use a great deal is PicMonkey. They're a graphic editing site. And from there, you could take either a photograph you already have and make alterations to it, or you could just take a blank background and create a banner or a photograph or an image or anything that's useful that you can create, that you need an image on. A perfect example would be ebooks. There, if you often need covers for those sort of things, then you, that's a great source to use that for. I use it a lot. I subscribe to it, and I'm very happy with their service. It's a small fee to pay for an excellent service, and you just need it these days, because if you don't have a general idea on how to create some of your own marketing tools, you're going to be at the mercy of other places. They're going to be charging you per item, and that can become more costly and not exactly cost effective if you're trying to put a project out to yourself. So you want to be able to do things on your own, and that PicMonkey really allows you to get out there and explore and experiment until something comes out that you like, that you can actually use. You don't have to be a great artist to use it, because I'm a writer. I'm not a graphic artist, but I'm able to use it successfully, and things come out looking professional. So I'm very, very happy with it, and I'm happy to have those folks on board. Last and not least, Soma Publishing. It's a publishing company that I'm associated with. It carries a lot of my my book titles, as well as of many of my artistic friends, like Linda Imbler or John Patrick Robbins, Carlos Villa, Lila Safir, Wayne Russell. We got a lot on board there, and there's excellent books from these folks from different viewpoints and even different cultural experiences. Mostly poetry and fiction, but we have a number of my own titles there. We have some science titles there. You can get the ebook "Strength to Be Human," which this show is based on. There you'll see the philosophy of learning about how religion and science, if you go in the wrong direction with them, they can really, really harm what you want to do creatively or even as a person. So, like, if anything, you want to take those things in moderation, because there's positive elements to them, but you don't want them to go so far that they harm your humanity or even your creativity. All right, and we're back now. Another story I have for you is one of a more personal nature. For years, I lived in Europe. Traveled Germany, England, Denmark. I was in the United States Air Force. I was proud to serve. It was the 80s, so it was an exciting time of a lot of art, a lot of great music. Some of the best music I felt in decades came out of the 80s, and I heard a lot of it in Europe. That's also where I really took the first major step forward to seriously take writing as a major part of my life. Talk about it, do it, go to some speaking engagements. Even when I was in the service, I can go out there to cafes and speak. A lot of people spoke English. Nothing wrong with that. Even if you're in Germany, it was exciting to do. So I wrote a lot, and I was able to get a lot published while I was there. So it was a big launching point for me to be able to travel and write. A lot of people don't get the chance to do both. It was a real blessing, a real benefit of the service. And I wrote a number of poems there, and a lot of them got published. But I had a batch, I guess call it the early European poems for me, Mark Anthony Rossi. And I never got those published. I wind up losing them somehow. I never found them, and I just went about my business, writing and serving, going to school, traveling a lot. I never found them. I just kind of went along with it because I wrote lots of others and started writing more essays and just learning more about the writing and having comments on it. So I really didn't give it any more thought. But, you know, every so often it would cross my mind. And years later, I always said to myself, where are those poems at? What could have happened to them? I'm not one of those people that throw things out a lot. I mean, unless it's something that's clearly garbage, I'm not a big throwing out person. So I know I didn't throw them out. I mean, I wrote in my own apartment that I rented there in Germany. I couldn't write on the base, but I was only in the barracks for a few months. So that was fine. It's just too noisy and too much stuff going on. It was not a coincidence that once I got my own place, I was able to, you know, start my creative endeavors on a regular and consistent and serious basis. But yeah, I always wondered about that. Well, a few months back, I literally found them. Turns out they were in some of my military paperwork that I put to the side. And I guess I just filed that stuff away in a box when I was there in the apartment and never realized I put them always with there. I guess they were on my table. They all mixed in together. It never occurred to me to go back to that. I laugh now with my children that Sherlock Holmes was right, and you really need to take his advice seriously about, you know, once you go through all the logical means, it's often that illogical suggestion or location or thought that's really going to be it. That other notion that you would not consider, that's where it was. I never explored that, and I kind of do that more now. As an older person, as sort of a routine, you know, if I lose something, don't go back to all the normal places. You got to go someplace different because that's a good chance of where it's going to be at. It was exciting to find those poems. It was 17 of them. In the last few months, I've gotten to publish those. I looked them over carefully. Didn't have to do too much editing. They were pretty straightforward because they were more of the travel poems. I had a few. When I went to Paris, I think I had one when I was in Spain, a number of them when I was in Germany, because I spent the most physical time in a foreign country was in Germany. Even though I traveled a lot, I still spent a lot of time in Germany. So most of them were from Germany. When I was at a castle, when I was out in the various locations of Germany, I visited a wonderful town on the outskirts of Germany called Trier, and apparently is one of the places that the Romans had set up shop when they conquered, Germany. And they still have the ruins and the entrance to that town in place there. They preserved it. So it was exciting to see, and it was very interesting to see because unless you've actually seen the movie Gladiator, or if you just simply know from the history of things, you know, Germany was a place that Rome did conquer. And it's just not really apparent to people. Because when you think of Germany, the last thing you think about is a Roman town or a Roman outpost. Because you're thinking of more of France, because that's where Julius Caesar spent so much of his time trying to conquer Gaul, Upper Gaul. In Spain, of course, conquering that. But you don't think about Germany, but yep, that was definitely there, and it was interesting to see. I was able to write a poem about that. And I also wrote a poem about the first concentration camp in the town of Dachau. And that was a very memorable experience. It's one of those things that it stays with you for the rest of your life. I remember being there, looking through it all. You could still, I felt, maybe it was in my imagination, but when I was in the barracks there where they had the prisoners, and you see the wood, it's almost like you could smell, you know, the sweat of being there, maybe even the blood of their torture and their beatings. The camp was surrounded by towers, so you could see and easily visualize when you look up there that there'd be a guy up there with a gun trying to shoot anybody trying to escape. Or maybe you just shoot somebody in the courtyard there if they acted up or did something that these Nazis, you know, didn't approve of. But it was an incredible camp and one heck of an experience. They have a film auditorium, so they actually show the live films that the Nazis had created, showing how they were doing experimentation on people. And when I went to go see that, it was an uncomfortable thing to see because it was not anything that was edited for the audience purposes. They were trying to show you exactly what occurred there. I got the book. It came with part of the entrance fee. I've saved that the rest of my life, and it's definitive proof of what these folks have done at the beginning of the Holocaust going forward. The various groups they had there, they had each one had a certain symbol. They had Russian prisoners there. They had Protestant pastors and Catholic pastors, homosexuals, gypsies, Jehovah Witnesses, of course, Jews, and often experiment on many of these different groups. I was leaving that auditorium after watching these films that were very difficult to watch, as educational they might have been. I honestly don't know, depending on the person you talk to, if just simply relaying the things that happened at the camp is enough versus seeing the film of them actually doing this. It certainly doesn't leave you. When I was leaving that auditorium, I saw an older fellow. He was on a platform, because there's a platform that goes to the auditorium. You have to step down from that platform in a staircase in order to go to the courtyard and go to the actual camp itself. And I could see him staring out of that. And I had that automatic feeling that this is a guy that might have been here before. So I tried to step a little closer to him. I don't know why I was so curious, because I wasn't trying to invade anybody's space. And God knows I'm not trying to be a voyeur or a tourist to somebody's pain. But, you know, I was young. I was 21. So you do things that you might not do now. But as I stepped closer, I noticed his arm when he was reached out on that banister there, and then I could see this. I could see the tattoo of the numbers on his arm. So it was automatically evident. Yeah, he was a prisoner. Maybe possibly there or at another camp. Germany was full of a number of them. I only visited one, and then of course there was a number even larger and more horrible ones out in Poland. But Germany had a number of them, and possibly he was a prisoner at that one. That's a real possibility from what he was staring out there, almost like he was reliving it for a moment. I didn't dare go beyond that. It wasn't like I wanted to talk to him. I had an interview with him or something. I mean, that's got to be an incredibly traumatic experience. And quite frankly, I was a little traumatized myself just by seeing how he was and approaching him and seeing that tattoo. I went back to the courtyard for a second time now with that in my mind of that guy, thinking about how he could have been imprisoned there in those barracks. So I wrote a poem about that. It's the first camp, Dachau. It's where they did all, I guess you could say, all the rules, all the procedures, all the things that were necessary for them to be able to build other camps, sort of like their experimental model. And I'm not wishing to indict anyone, but when I went through the town later on, the town of Dachau, I always found it amazing how these folks did not know what was going on there. Because oftentimes they were interviewed afterwards, the war, oh no, I didn't know anything was going on, that's terrible. Yet it wouldn't be hard to see from the distance, because I seen it. From some of the buildings, you can peer in over there and see there's people in there. You can see from the towers up there that there'd be men up there with guns. You got to be able to know there was more than just a prison, because the crematorium there would have spread ashes for that whole town on a regular basis. The smell, the ashes, the noise, the men with guns, the trucks coming in and out. Man, I understand that people can live in denial. I understand that sometimes they can even be, you know, purposely blind to things, but I always wondered, being a citizen in that town during that time, what they put to the back of the mind or didn't want to acknowledge. Just incredible. But it was a real educational experience. And I think oftentimes when you travel, you're going to get those kind of experiences that takes you out of your own element doesn't have to be necessarily something historical like that. You know, I could just be, you know, going to a bullfight in Spain, which I did, and have the experience of that. And I wrote a poem about that. And not just the crowd or the killing of an animal as a form of entertainment, because that's really what it is in the end. But also just being in a place that is not yours, that is not a part of who you are. It slowly changes you, because you have to widen your view and you have to open your mind to what's going on. Doesn't mean you have to always necessarily accept everything. I mean, you certainly don't go to Doc Howe and slap everybody's hands and, you know, high five everybody. Wow, that is an excellent experience for me. Put that on my list. I mean, it's something serious and life changing. In a way, going to a bullfight is too. And I'm not the greatest advocate of animal rights. As much as I love animals, I'm not really a person that has a lot of knowledge or information about that, or, you know, believe every animal in the world has to be protected and treated like, you know, like a human being. But obviously, killing animals needlessly doesn't make a lot of sense to me, and it never has, and is never going to be. And don't get me wrong, I don't belong to any organization about animals. But at the same point, it sounds wonderful and operatic and dramatic, and even a bit macho. You know, cool uniform, sitting there, spinning around, stabbing a sword, this and that. But when you actually see it, you're like, wow, all that just to kill an animal. I mean, I can't get me wrong. They know that they sell the meat of the bull that they're killing. So it's not like this is left there to die and they toss it someplace. But still, in the end, you know, they're killing it for the sport. I mean, I don't agree with people who say that, you know, horse racing is bad for animals, because as long as they treat them properly, and as you can imagine, since many of them are worth so much money and so much money are invested in them, I mean, they have no choice but to treat them correctly. So I would differ in somebody that says, you know, horse racing is, you know, abuse. But I have no problem with someone who says bullfighting is an abuse. There's no way around, you know, not saying that it isn't. So those amazing experiences, I find, they really help you. And I think for the average person that wants to do something creative, get yourself out of your element. You don't have to fly to Spain. Maybe most people can't do that. I was fortunate to do that. But maybe it's simply going to another city or another town or another state for a little while. Go visit something different that you haven't seen before, whether it's a new art museum or a new park or another zoo, or, you know, maybe an animal preserve, something that's out of your element. It helps change your view on things. It also helps change how you might creatively want to come about it, something. And I find taking yourself out of your element is another part of finding confidence, because that allows you to now become something different, because you have to make adjustments. You have to make some changes. And I think those really help a person, because the more experiences they have and the more they have to adapt, the less they're going to be fearful of things, because they feel already that, hey, I've gained some experience. I got some confidence, and fear is less of a grip on me. It's less of an element in our lives, because we've gone to other places and did other things. All right, folks, and that's a wrap. This is Mark Anthony Rossi, Strength to Be Human podcast. I do want to remind you about our blog, Strength to Be Human, at blogspot.com. Don't forget to check out the show here, Strength to Be Human at Podbean, and to check out our affiliate, Wix, PicMonkey, and Soma Publishing. And don't forget, the air is human, but so is to love.